Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone. I obviously need your energy this morning. I'm ill, so I'm going to try to make it through this without losing my voice. It is my pleasure to share with you some of the work from our team at Loyola Marymount University on the CCHE project, Communities Creating Healthy Environments, which was an initiative funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. I'm a professor of psychology. I'm not a public health person, but a clinical psychologist by training who has since defected to community psychology. And I'm also a past president nationally of the Association of Black Psychologists. So what I want to share with you is a little bit of the work that was done around trying to address issues of childhood obesity in communities of color. The vision that emerged out of the wisdom and thinking of the Praxis Project in Washington, D.C. Was the reality that we are dealing with playgrounds littered with broken glass, that we have neighborhoods with very few healthy eating options, and that we're not going to address substantively childhood obesity if we don't deal with root cause issues like land use policies, predatory marketing, poor infrastructure in communities, lack of access to healthy choices for recreation and food. So the goal of CCHE was to try to get at the heart of the issue by supporting community organizing as a public health strategy that would focus on changing public policies to create healthy environments. And the vision was that you could forge a broad-based movement led by communities who are most affected, and that if they are leading the process, they can deal with the root causes of obesity in bold and creative ways. And so, for example, this is a popular education flyer that was used by one of the 22 CCHE sites in South Central Los Angeles, where they were trying to help the community to understand that perhaps some of the childhood obesity issues in the community really had nothing to do with poor health choices per se on the part of individuals and families, but had a lot to do with context. So, for example, in South Central Los Angeles, you had nearly 6,000 people per grocery store compared to 3,700 in West LA, which is a predominantly white middle-class community. 6 farmers markets in South Central compared to 16 in West LA. 72% of restaurants are fast food in South Central compared to 41% in West LA. 9 liquor stores per square mile in South Central compared to only 2 West LA. And in fact, in South Central Los Angeles, there are more liquor stores in this one small part of Los Angeles County than the entire state of Rhode Island. And those liquor stores have become the grocery stores. And of course, they do not provide Whole Foods. And then they showed all some of the corresponding health status consequences associated with these glaring inequalities in access to healthy food. This is another community in the CCHE initiative in Miami, Power U. And when one looks at this particular community and their focus was having to do with breastfeeding, one might look at the neighborhood and say, oh, okay, so there may be things having to do with the neighborhood and community norms that contribute to issues of childhood obesity and low levels of breastfeeding. But in fact, the community was not the issue. It was the hospitals that serviced the community that were the issue, who were promoting the use of formula without providing any kind of support and education around breastfeeding. And so the campaign in that community actually ended up focusing on 3 local hospitals, trying to get them to agree to transition to UNICEF and World Health Organization baby-friendly initiative approaches. So the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and Praxis came up with this vision, and that vision included a theory and set of benchmarks of success that in fact you could, if you did base building, develop leaders in the community, promoted policy change, that you could actually address the root causes of childhood obesity and stop pointing the finger at individuals and families. So there were a range of benchmarks that emerged out of this process, and this was very much a community participatory research process. the visibility, if we saw changes in the visibility of the issue in a community, that was a benchmark that there was some progress being made. Increases in local community leadership, changes in community norm, public will and political will changing, regulations changing, et cetera. So in other words, we did not have a magic bullet, but there were a range of things that could actually indicate that there was movement around dealing with root causes. Our evaluation methodology was a mixed methods approach, combination of qualitative and quantitative research. Much of our qualitative research, we did extensive data coding and turned it into quantitative data. We did structured interviews, focus groups, site visits, observations, surveys, etc. We had a team of 7 senior research associates and some research assistants. And they were assigned to the 22 grantees, and we tried to match the researchers with the sites based on things like cultural background, interests, and areas of expertise. That became incredibly important as we moved into certain communities where trust was at an all-time low when it came to evaluation and research. It is also critical because we placed a heavy emphasis on the role of culture in understanding what was going on and being able to interpret things as they unfolded. We also involved ourselves in building relationships with these communities and establishing a positive partnership. So the model itself, the CHA model is grounded in an understanding that before you can even begin to think about defining an evaluation strategy and understanding what you're dealing with, that there are these lenses through which you have to see the community. So the model defines the change process and operates within a context. And the context includes the particular social justice values, for example, equitable access to resources, whether or not the value is placed on the issues associated with culture and race, or issues associated with equitable distribution of resources, economic and otherwise, as well as the interests of the grantees. The influence of culture and place in the target communities is also important. And then the community organizing approach and organizational capacity of the social movement organization that's shepherding the change process. All are important to understand before you do anything. And then as you are doing the evaluation, those lenses must stay front and center in the work. These factors ultimately influence the particular set of organizing strategies and tactics, the policy campaigns, the policy outcomes that are realized. And then the process also says that, you know, when you start trying to shift the analysis and link obesity to structural inequities, technical assistance becomes important. So each of these components of the CHA model informed the analytic strategy of the CHA evaluation. So the focus, because community organizing was the primary strategy, we were able to identify five major community organizing tactics: growing a community base, building a leader base, building an ally base, mobilizing the base, and message reframe. And those changes in those areas became benchmarks of progress toward a public health process of change. And then secondly, these things would lead to policy campaigns that are developed by the communities where they would either be challenging inequity or changing the discourse, or building a power base. So in other words, in terms of challenging inequity, that they would actually show up at meetings and say, this is a problem, this is incorrect, this is harming our community. In terms of changing the discourse, you would see a shift in how the narrative in the popular media, in the formal media, and in the communities themselves, and even in the public health arena, begins to shift away from focusing on individuals and looking at the root cause issues. And then building power. The discourse in the places and halls of decision making now take the community into consideration before they make a final determination. Well, what would the community coalition think? Well, what would Power SF think? What would Power U, what would they have to say about this? So those became intermediate outcomes. And then actual policy wins, what we call victories, around healthy food access and recreation access, became the outcomes for the evaluation. All of this is leading to an impact of structural change where there is food equity and recreation equity, and that leads to long-term impact and where you see a decrease in childhood obesity. Our project, because you know many of these initiatives are not funded long enough for you to actually see these kinds of shifts at that level, but we are continuing to track the work and hope to be able to see what impact happened. But this is an example of our ability to then take each of these variables and actually quantify changes, and we actually looked at what were the challenges and what were the wins around or accomplishments within each of the categories. So for example, a lot of accomplishments across the 22 sites when it came to growing their community base. But we were also interested in knowing what were some of the challenges. And so, but the ratio of accomplishments to challenges was quite different. We also were then able to look at the entire group of 22 grantees, but we also, they were funded in two different waves. And they, in fact, were two different cohorts of grantees in terms of their sophistication in community organizing and the kinds of issues that they were addressing. But they all distributed themselves across the four major ethnocultural racial groups. So we were able to look at, for example, differences or changes that occurred with organizing strategies or policy campaigns or policy wins overall and by cohort. We also were able to then see what kind of changes happened and who was focusing on healthy food access. And so you had all of these locations in the country focused on healthy food access. Some were focused on safe recreation space, and that included these grantees. Others were focused on access to health care as a strategy to address childhood obesity. And only two were actually looking at that particular issue. Some were looking at access to affordable housing, again, a small number, using that as their strategy. And then protecting the environment was a focus for a handful of grantees. And we say, protecting the environment, what does that have to do with it? For example, Power SF up in San Francisco, working in Hunter's Bay View, but predominantly African American community, the kids had a playground, but they couldn't go outside and play in it because of the toxic dump site right outside of the community's front door. So that had to be cleaned up in order to address safe recreation access. Some were involved with students' rights and residents' rights. And then we were able to also look at the fact that many of these grantees were dealing with multiple issues, healthy food access and safe recreation, health, et cetera. Let me speed through this because I got a lot to cover here. So the other thing is that we started using some tools. So now many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with power analysis. Well, this is not that kind of power analysis. I'm not talking about statistics. I'm now in the world of community organizing. And power analysis is an actual tool that was developed by an organization in South Los Angeles called Agenda and Scope. And it's a tool to help organizations do a critical analysis of their context around the whatever campaign issue they're dealing with. So it's grounded in grassroots power. It allows you to tell a nuanced story about a campaign. It forces evaluation to look beyond externally driven agendas and mere goals and deliverables. It really is wonderful at capturing process, and it helps communities and researchers to identify where communities are building power with decision makers, with stakeholders, allies. And it can help organizations to become more tactical and strategic in their campaigns. So we ended up learning how community organizers do power analysis, and then we went to each of the grantee sites along with Scope and Agenda. When the communities were learning about power analysis, we were developing a tool that could allow the grantees and us to see shifts in every single aspect, aka variable, in power analysis. And we interviewed the communities quarterly and collected this data over 3 years. So this is actually the schematic that covers all of the components of a power analysis, where you kind of map out how much power a particular entity has, and then you locate people on that power analysis, whether or not they're aligned with your agenda or the opposing agenda. And so we took, for example, this is Power U in Miami, and they were able to map out, for example, pregnant women, low-income women, have very little power. And they were kind of in the middle around their perspective about the importance of breastfeeding. Of course, the pharmaceutical companies, the hospital lobbyists, et cetera, much more power, and they were to the far right of the position of the community. So this is another one of the grantees, Padres y Jóvenes Unidos, and their power analysis. But the next phase of the work is really looking at healthy schools campaigns. So the work continues. The original grantees across the country for CICHE have now aligned with a new phase of the work, which is really, in a sense, building a mass movement across the country using community organizing as a public health strategy on a host of health issues. In this instance, the Transformative Schools Network is trying to leverage connections that, and we're doing actual network analysis, networks and connections across the country on access to healthy food and recreation space and time within school systems.